killing dog. Courtney calls, too wasted on Elleville to meet me for a coherent dinner at Crane's, the new Kitty Oates Sanders restaurant in Gramercy Park, where Jean, my secretary, made reservations for us last week, and I'm nonplussed. Even though it got excellent reviews, one in New York Magazine, the other in The Nation, I don't complain or persuade Courtney to change her mind, since I have two files I should go over, and the Patty Winters show I taped this morning hasn't been watched yet. It's 60 Minutes, about women who've had mastectomies, which at 7:30 over breakfast before the office I couldn't bear to sit through, but after today, hanging out at the office where the air conditioning broke down, a tedious lunch with Cunningham at Odeon, my fucking Chinese cleaners unable to get bloodstains out of another Soprani jacket, four videotapes overdue that ended up costing me a fortune, a 20-minute wait at the Stairmasters, I've adapted. These events have toughened me, and I'm prepared to deal with this particular topic. 2,000 abdominal crunches and 30 minutes of rope jumping in the living room. The Wurlitzer jukebox blasting The Lion Sleeps Tonight over and over, even though I worked out in the gym today for close to 2 hours. After this, I get dressed to pick up groceries at D'Agostino's. Blue jeans by Armani, a white polo shirt, an Armani sport coat, no tie, hair slicked back with Thompson mousse. Since it's drizzling, a pair of black waterproof lace-ups by Manolo Blahnik. 3 knives and 2 guns carried in a black epi leather attaché case, $3,200, by Louis Vuitton. Because it's cold, and I don't want to fuck up my manicure, a pair of Armani deerskin gloves. Finally, a belted trench coat in black leather by Gianfranco Ferré that cost $4,000. Though it's only a short walk to D'Agostino's, I put on a CD Walkman anyway, with the long version of Bon Jovi's Wanted, Dead or Alive, already in it. I grab an Etro wood-handled paisley umbrella from Bergdorf Goodman, $300 on sale off a newly installed umbrella rack in the closet near the entranceway, and I'm out the door. After the office, I worked out at Exclusive, and once home made obscene phone calls to young Dalton girls, the numbers I chose coming from the register I stole a copy of from the administration office when I broke in last Thursday night. "I'm a corporate raider," I whispered lasciviously into the cordless phone. "I orchestrate hostile takeovers. What do you think of that?" And I would pause before making sucking noises, freakish pig-like grunts, and then ask, "Huh, bitch?" Most of the time, I could tell they were frightened, and this pleased me greatly, enabled me to maintain a strong, pulsing erection for the duration of the phone calls, until one of the girls, Hillary Wallace, asked, unfazed, "Dad, is that you?" And whatever enthusiasm I'd built up plummeted. Vaguely disappointed, I made a few more calls, but only half-heartedly, opening today's mail while doing so, and I finally hung up in mid-sentence when I came across a personalized reminder from Clifford, the guy who helps me at Armani, that there was a private sale at the boutique on Madison 2 weeks ago. And though I figured out that one of the doormen probably withheld the card to piss me off, it still doesn't erase the fact that I missed the fucking sale. And dwelling over this loss while wandering down Central Park West, somewhere around 76, 75th, it strikes me profoundly that the world is more often than not a bad and cruel place. Someone who looks almost exactly like Jason Taylor, black hair slicked back, navy double-breasted cashmere coat with a beaver collar, black leather boots, Morgan Stanley, passes beneath a street lamp and nods as I turn down the volume on the Walkman to hear him say, "Hello, Kevin." And I catch a whiff of gray flannel, and still walking, I look back at the person who resembles Taylor, who could be Taylor, wondering if he's still dating Shelby Phillips, when I almost stumble over a beggar lying on the street, sprawled in the doorway of an abandoned restaurant, a place Tony McManus opened 2 summers ago called Amnesia. And she's black and out of her mind crazy, repeating the words, "Money, please help, mister. Money, please help, mister," like some kind of Buddhist chant. I try to lecture her on the merits of getting a job somewhere. Perhaps it's Cineplex Odeon, I suggested not impolitely, silently debating whether or not to open the briefcase, pull out the knife or the gun. But it strikes me that she's too easy a target to be truly satisfying. So I tell her to go to hell and turn up the Walkman, just as Bon Jovi cries, "It's all the same, only the names have changed," and move on, stopping at an automated teller to take $300 out for no particular reason, all the bills crisp, freshly printed 20s. And I delicately place them in my gazelle skin wallet so as not to wrinkle them. At Columbus Circle, a juggler wearing a trench cloak and top hat, who is usually at this location afternoons, and who calls himself Stretch Man, performs in front of a small, uninterested crowd. Though I smell prey, he seems fully worthy of my wrath. I move on in search of a less dorky target. Though if he'd been a mime, odds are he'd already be dead. Faded posters of Donald Trump on the cover of Time magazine cover the windows of another abandoned restaurant, what used to be Palazzo, and this fills me with a newfound confidence. I arrived at D'Agostino's, standing directly in front of it, gazing into it, and I have an almost overwhelming urge to walk in and browse through each aisle, filling my basket with bottles of balsamic vinegar and sea salt, roam through the vegetable and produce stands, inspecting the color tones of red peppers and yellow peppers and green peppers and purple peppers, deciding what flavor, what shape of gingerbread cookie to buy. But I'm still longing for something deeper, something undefined to do beforehand, and I start to stalk the dark, cold streets off Central Park West, and I catch sight of my face reflected in the tinted windows of a limousine that's parked in front of Café des Artistes. And my mouth is moving involuntarily, my tongue wetter than usual, and my eyes are blinking uncontrollably of their own accord. In the street lamp's glare, my shadow is vividly cast on the wet pavement, and I can see my gloved hands moving, alternately clutching themselves into fists, fingers stretching, wriggling, and I have to stop in the middle of 67th Street to calm myself down, whisper soothing thoughts, anticipating D'Agostino's, a reservation at Dorsia, the new Mike and the Mechanics CD, and it takes an awesome amount of strength to fight down the urge to start slapping myself in the face. Coming slowly up the street is an old queer wearing a cashmere turtleneck, a paisley wool ascot, and a felt hat, walking a brown and white Sharpie, its bunched-up face sniffing low to the ground. The two of them get closer, passing beneath one street lamp, then another, and I've composed myself sufficiently to slowly take off the Walkman and inconspicuously unlock the briefcase. I'm standing in the middle of the thin strip of sidewalk next to a white BMW 320i, and the queer with the Sharpie is now within feet of me. And I get a good look at him, late 50s, pudgy, with obscenely healthy-looking pink skin, no wrinkles. All of this topped off with a ridiculous mustache that accentuates his feminine features. He gives me the once-over with a quizzical smile, while the Sharpie sniffs a tree, then a garbage bag sitting next to the BMW. "Nice dog," I smile, leaning down. The Sharpie eyes me warily, then growls. "Richard?" The man glares at the dog, then looks back up at me, apologetic, and I can sense he's flattered, not only that I've noticed his dog, but that I've actually stopped to talk to him about it. And I swear the old bastard is positively flushed, creaming in his tacky loose corduroys from, I'm guessing, Ralph Lauren. "It's okay," I tell him, and pet the dog gently, laying the briefcase on the ground. "It's a Sharpie, right?" "No, Sharpie," he says, lisping, a way I've never heard it pronounced before. "Sharpie." I try to say it the same way he does, still stroking the velvet bumpiness of the dog's neck and back. "No," he laughs flirtatiously. "Sharpie. Accent on the last syllable. Accent on the last syllable." "Well, whatever," I say, standing up and grinning boyishly. "It's a beautiful animal." "Oh, thank you," he says, then, exasperated, It costs a fortune. Really? Why? I ask, leaning down again and stroking the dog. Hi, Richard. Hiya, little fella. Oh, you wouldn't believe it, he says. You see, the bags around its eyes have to be lifted surgically every 2 years. So we have to go all the way down to Key West, which has the only vet I really trust in this world. And a little snip, a little tuck, and Richard can see splendidly once again. Can't you, baby? He nods approvingly as I continue to run my hand seductively across the dog's back. Well, I say, he looks great. There's a pause in which I watch the dog. The owner keeps eyeing me. Then he just can't help it. He has to break the silence. Listen, he says, I really hate to ask this. Go ahead, I urge. Oh, gosh, this is so silly, he admits, chuckling. I start laughing. Why? Are you a model? He asks, not laughing anymore. I could swear I've seen you in a magazine or somewhere. No, I'm not, I say, deciding not to lie. But I'm flattered. Well, you look just like a movie star. He waves a limp wrist, then, I don't know. And finally he lisps the following, I swear to God, to himself. Oh, stop it, silly, you're embarrassing yourself. I lean down, giving the appearance of picking up the briefcase. But because of the shadows I'm leaning into, he doesn't see me pull out the knife, the sharpest one, with the serrated edge. And I'm asking him what he paid for Richard, naturally, but also very deliberately, without even looking up to check to see if other people are walking down the street. In one swift movement, I pick the dog up quickly by the neck and hold it with my left arm, pushing it back against the street lamp while it nips at me, trying to bite my gloves, its jaws snapping. But since I've got such a tight grip on its throat, it can't bark, and I can actually hear my hand crush its trachea. I push the serrated blade into its stomach and quickly slice open its hairless belly in a squirt of brown blood, its legs kicking and clawing at me. Then blue and red intestines bulge out, and I drop the dog onto the sidewalk, the queer just standing there, still gripping the leash. And this has all happened so fast, he's in shock, and he just stares in horror, saying, oh my God, as the Sharpie drags itself around in a circle, its tail wagging, squealing, and it starts licking and sniffing the pile of its own intestines spilled out in a mound on the sidewalk, some still connected to its stomach. And as it goes into its death throes, still attached to its leash, I whirl around on its owner and push him back hard with a bloodied glove and start randomly stabbing him in the face and head, finally slashing his throat open in two brief chopping motions. An arc of red-brown blood splatters the white BMW 320i parked at the curb, setting off its car alarm, four fountain-like bursts coming from below his chin. The spray-like sound of the blood. He falls to the sidewalk, shaking like mad, blood still pumping as I wipe the knife clean on the front of his jacket and toss it back in the briefcase, and begin to walk away, but to make sure the old queer is really dead and not faking it. I sometimes do. I shoot him with a silencer twice in the face, and then I leave, almost slipping in the puddle of blood that is formed by the side of his head. And I'm down the street and out of darkness, and like in a movie, I appear in front of the D'Agostino's, sales clerks beckoning for me to enter, and I'm using an expired coupon for a box of oat bran cereal, and the girl at the checkout counter, black, dumb, slow, doesn't get it, doesn't notice the expiration date has passed, even though it's the only thing I buy. And I get a small but incendiary thrill when I walk out of the store, opening the box, stuffing handfuls of the cereal into my mouth, trying to whistle Hip to Be Square at the same time. And then I've opened my umbrella, and I'm running down Broadway, then up Broadway, then down again, screaming like a banshee, my coat open, flying out behind me like some kind of cape.